Festival. On January 14th, the documentary The House I Live In explores the risks that prohibition poses to freedom and the tragedy of addicts being treated as criminals. Meanwhile, the prisons of America are growing overcrowded with nonviolent criminals and illegal drugs are still being sold in schoolyards. This film is being shown on January 14th at the North Portland Neighborhood Library off of Killingsworth Street at 6 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It is. It is just that. It's a Friday morning.
That which means makes it good. Mm-hmm. And it means at 8:04 in the morning, it is, in fact, time for Positively Revolting. I'm your host, Ani, along with my beloved and delightful co-host, Lynn. Morning, Lynn.
Good morning, Ani.
And here we are looking at drawing 2013 to a close. We were puzzling over what we were going to do here at your very own community radio station, KBOO Portland.
That's the place
where we find ourselves.
Yep.
And as we were looking at what to do, we were talking about a couple of our favorite things, stuff and such, and we decided to once again dig deep at the root of patriarchy in hopes of excising it from our future, because that, in fact, seems like the turn we want to take this year. Let's go ahead and get it over with. Let's smash the patriarchy. Let's do it.
All right.
So one of the aspects we wanted to look at this morning is the insidious way that patriarchy continues itself, how it replicates itself by being part of the chorus of our culture. When something is so deeply embedded and passed on as a part of our culture, it really means that this thing is embedded in the psyche, and we tend to see it as natural. It's just the way things are. It's sort of a natural conclusion to a natural process. There's nothing we can do about it. It's human nature. It's just how things turn out.
So are you trying to say that human nature is shaped by something besides a sky god?
Yes, in fact. Yes, that's exactly what I'm trying to say, Lynn.
Okay.
I'm saying that we write the rules to this game. And we can tell this as we look throughout time, cross-culturally, because cultures are very, very different. There is no natural order. There is no way things all work out without our own hand in the matter. We replicate our cultures. And we do it in a way that we don't notice. Right? The perspective does not actually make cultural norms into universal truths, though we from inside the culture may feel that they are. So this has everything to do with how we replicate patriarchy. If we want to get rid of patriarchy, and I do, oh yes, I do, then we actually need to see how it shapes us. We need to actually look at its influences in our lives. And one of those ways is what we tell our children. And I really want to look at how we socialize ourselves and each other early on in the process. Like the words, be a man, said to, you know, say a child of the boy persuasion. The words, that's not ladylike. That's not what my little princess does.
Ooh. What?
We don't, no, those are not good words to say, you know, a girl child. No, we don't do that. This is how we actually infuse sexism into the next generation and the next generation.
Or why is he the boss and she is bossy?
Ooh, nice.
Thank you. Not original.
And yet.
But, you know, and trolling around the interwebs looking for articles and you know, something besides just my opinion to base all this on, what I found that's so interesting is that there's tons of information about income equality, but that all still starts with the socialization, and there's not quite so much information on that. This culture is still so economy obsessed, which makes sense because jobs are hard. People are having a very hard regular human being, like say the 99% are having a very hard time financially, and so people are thinking about these things. But that's not where it starts. It doesn't start in the workplace. It starts way before then.
It does, in fact, start way before then. There is a pretty fabulous book that was written, 20 years ago, a little bit more, by Suzanne Farr, which is called Homophobia, A Weapon of Sexism. You can actually find it online in large part at this point. And Farr notes that the patriarchy is basically ensconced on three support beams. Yeah, that's it. That's what I want to say. That there are three things working together to, in fact, keep the patriarchy established. That would be economics. That would be violence. And it would be homophobia. And the way that these things interplay in our lives, I think it's as true today as it was 20 years ago. Still, economics is one of those things that, in fact, really serves to keep women down.
It ain't great for men either.
No, it's not.
Not really.
No, let's face facts. Capitalism kills us all, just like patriarchy hurts us all. It's true. But if we look at it, you know, when I was 13 and starting to get involved in this stuff, I remember this woman who was somewhat older than me, and I looked to her as like one of my political gurus, and I was like, what's that button mean? Because she wore this button that said 73 cents. It was 68 cents then. It's hard to say. Well, it's like up to 78 cents now. And, you know, I was 13, like 34 years ago. Mm-hmm. So what, we've gained a nickel, maybe a dime. We might have gained a dime in the last 34 years, but we are still well under wage parity. And what is that about? Right? I mean, in this
men have to support families. Apparently women don't. Who can live on one income family? That hasn't happened. Not even for the white folks for some time.
I mean, it's one of those things. It's kind of well, horrifying. As we are told over and over again, we live in a, you know, a post-feminist world. We don't really need that anymore. I mean, obviously, women can do whatever we want, right? So we don't need feminism. Feminists are extremists, right? They're just trying to prove that men are bad. No, in fact, but looking for a little wage parity is still a good idea. Looking to actually find those ways that we are able to, well, let's just say, make our own mark in the world. Let's you know, that put us on some even footing and say that'd be all right.
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
It's a human right, like housing, like healthcare, like education. These things, to me, seem human rights, and it's all still being debated. I find that fascinating. So, listeners, dear listeners, if you find this at all interesting and you have comments, has gender equality ever been an issue for you? Our number here is 503-231-8187, and we are looking to hear from you because this is a participatory talk radio show, and we would very much enjoy your participation. It's Positive Revolting. We are on KABU. If you go ahead and find us on Facebook at Positively Revolting, like us there. And you can also communicate with us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. Oh, so many ways to do it. And if I get it together, I'll go over to my phone and start twitting. So there you go. We also have a Twitter handle.
She could reach for her phone at any moment. Yeah, so I'm just going to go back to this, the book, Suzanne Farr's Homophobia as a Weapon of Sexism. Farr asks the question, what would the world be like without homophobia in it? For everyone, male, female, and whatever sexual identity they may choose. Here's some of the answers that women in workshops that Suzanne Farr held gave. And they seem like pretty solid answers to me. Kids won't be called tomboys or sissies. They'll just be who they are, able to do what they wish. People will be able to love anyone, no matter what sex. The issue will be simply whether or not she or he is a good human being, compatible and loving. Affection will be opened up between women and men, women and women, men and men. It won't be centered on sex. People won't fear being called names if they show affection to someone who isn't a potential mate or mate. If affection is opened up, then isolation will be broken down for all of us, especially for those who generally experience little physical affection, such as unmarried older people. Women will be able to work whatever jobs we want without being labeled masculine. There will be less violence if men do not feel they have to prove and assert their manhood. There will be less violence if they do not have to prove their desire to dominate and control. It will not spill over from their personal to the level of national and international politics and the use of bigger and better weapons to control other countries. People will wear whatever clothes they wish, with the priority being on comfort rather than the display of femininity or masculinity. We would do away with gender roles. So, there's some initial thoughts to ponder this morning. As Lynn says, we exhort you to call 503-231-8187. Let us know what your thoughts are this morning, as we really think it's time to have a go at patriarchy one more time. Let's look at what it would mean to live in an egalitarian relationship with each other. What does that do? Again, I just have to say I love this point. There will be less violence if men do not feel they have to prove and assert their manhood. And what makes men feel that they must prove and assert their manhood? It is, again, the voice of culture. It is our voices talking to the small boy children about being a man, about boys not crying, about manning up. This is a travesty. It really is, I think, a sin against a child's nature. Call us. Let us know what you think. 503-231-8187. I also want to invite you over to our Facebook page. You can find us at facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. And you can indeed find a little clip that I posted on our Facebook page from the Representation Project. You can find that just below the note that I've posted about today's show. And go ahead and give that a view. Enforcing a gender conformity kills the spirit, I wrote on our Facebook page. It's like a form of violence to tell a child to be a man or to tell a child it's not ladylike. There is something that was posted by Upworthy just a little bit ago about how we socialize male children. And it's a very powerful video. I was going to capture the audio for this program and realized there was a lot of editing I would need to do to not run afoul of FCC regulations. So, in fact, at the 11th hour, I did not do that. But I do encourage you to go to Positively Revolting's page on Facebook and to check this video out. It's called There's Something Absolutely Wrong with What We Do to Boys Before They Grow Into Men. It was posted by Upworthy, and you can find it on the Positively Revolting page. 503-231-8187 is the number to call, just like Jackson has. Good morning, Jackson. You're on the air.
Good morning, Ani. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Great, great. I was listening to you guys, and you're burning the radio. It's sounding pretty good this morning.
Thank you.
I was listening to BBC last night, and the report was concerning how there aren't enough women in Silicon Valley and how they need more women in the CEO positions. And they went to this big convention down in Silicon Valley, and they started talking to all the ladies. And ladies going, all the ladies were being like positive and upbeat. And there was this writer who wrote a book concerning what the women have to deal with in Silicon Valley. And this particular writer says, they're being really nice, but they're not saying what needs to be said. And the interviewer said, why? Well, I mean, the women who go to conventions are still being groped. They're still being sexualized at these conventions, and they're not saying anything,
Mm-hmm.
If they do say anything, they're considered the woman with a chip on her shoulder.
And not a silicon chip, I'm saying.
Excuse me?
And not a silicon chip either.
Yeah. I mean, it's
who would think all these geeks would be groping? I mean, what?
This is amazing.
This is a bunch of geeks, and they're still groping women. Oh my God!
Oh, well, Lynn, you don't hang out with geeks much, do you?
Yes, I do.
go ahead, Jackson.
It's all about understanding the language and how we're living in this 1984 type world where
true that
people are unable to really express what needs to be said in order to come to a concise solution to the problem. And a lot of women, and the irony is, this is the same exact technique that's used on minorities that want to stand up for their rights. They're considered that they have a chip on their shoulder.
Right.
So it's looking like this thing is kind of focusing itself a little bit on what type of animal we're dealing with. It's like, you're going to have to deal with the supremacy inferiority situation, and if you say anything about it, we're going to demonize you as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm more of a humanist. I don't want to necessarily call myself a feminist, but mm-hmm. I understand feminism to such a point to where it's a perfect outcry to the imbalance of a horrible masculine, a horrible-wise masculinized world that's created an amazing imbalance. And as a result, it's really pockmarking our planet and threatening the very existence of the human species. So, I mean, we do need balance, and women do represent regeneration. And, I heard that last night on BBC. I was really surprised that these women were still having to deal with that type of behavior.
Well,
they said there are like three different types of men. One of the men that you brought up, when you were bringing up, these men are coming from somewhere. Men don't give birth to men. Women give birth to men. How much influence are these women having over their sons?
Right.
In order to perpetuate this thing?
Right.
I think that's the real question to ask. I mean, it's been 40, 45, 50 years since women's rights and equal rights in this country, and things seem to be backsliding. And there appears to be some type of correlation between the backsliding of everybody's rights and the economy.
Yeah, right.
You know, I've been told when the economy starts to dry up a little bit, everybody kind of goes back to their tribalism and back to their supremacy situations where they want to get all the high ground financially.
Well, I'm thinking that that has everything to do with insecurity, right?
Yeah.
And as part of what it is to be a man means that you're going to be economically dominant, right? You're going to be able to take care of your home, able to get the home, able to get the good car, able to take care of the family, you know, heavy air quotes.
Monetarily.
Then when we have an economic situation like we do, and men are finding that it's impossible to hold on to these things, and they start feeling like maybe, you know, they have something more to prove, and the cycle continues, right? It gets in a little deeper.
I want to agree with you, but being a male, I also hear the other side.
Uh-huh.
I hear the other side, and there are a lot of industries that aren't used to having women in them. And now that women are coming in them, the men are having to watch their tongues and watch how they conduct themselves in front of them.
Well, uh-huh.
And when they're together, they say some rather interesting things. And as a non-white male, I almost feel like a mulatto listening to whites complain about blacks, but I'm a male listening to men complain about women. It's amazing to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as male head of household, does that justify women being treated like nothing, like non-humans? Well, I make the money, you shut up, I call the shots, I have the quote-unquote supremacy, because it seems like all these isms basically lead to some type of supremacy.
Yeah.
You know, and like I heard on a report and on BBC last night, you know, that like three or two different type of males, and one of these males have had some type of influence, strong mother figure, female figure, who would indoctrinate their boys early in life to where they wouldn't turn into these little monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the boys that did not have strong feminine influence.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the wheel of karma still going in that destructive direction.
Don't you think also that a male influence that is not has compassion and ability to make humanist decisions, isn't that equally as I just think that's equally as important.
It's very weird.
I mean, in my family, my father was the wage earner, but my parents were partners, and I grew up thinking that just because you made the money didn't mean you got to make all the decisions, which is a rude awakening, I tell you, when you get out in the world. But I think that it's just as important that men's influence in the family is also equally as important, especially for, what do we call that, mirroring? Or what sort of example you sent?
You're insinuating some type of balance. And I mean, if we have that level of balance in all of our American families,
No, we don't. And I'm not saying we do. Oh, yeah, there'd be something else, don't you worry.
Right. I mean, positively revolting wouldn't be here. and we wouldn't be hearing you beautiful ladies' voices over the phone, because everyone would have parents like you and there would be balance.
I'm not saying that's the norm at all. What I was saying is that what I'm starting to hear in your conversation is that it's all up to women. And I think that it's an equal responsibility.
It's all up to women.
That was what I was starting to hear.
Point out to men that they're human beings,
mm-hmm.
and they're not just objects.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They're not just chattel to be owned and shut up. And we'll listen to you when we feel like it. But when a real power play comes up, you'll know that we're men.
And yet, I want to.
Because in the end, I look at the top of all of these corporations where all the real power is, and I only see one demographic of a man up there. I only see one demographic of someone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a rainbow of different backgrounds and psychology,
mm-hmm.
you know, phenotypes. I'm only looking at something rather monoculture at the top.
And sociopathic, yeah.
Well, I'll let you come to that conclusion as the host.
Lynn has.
I'm not that smart.
I don't have a problem with that. You go right ahead.
Hey, Jackson, thank you very much for your call.
Yes, have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. I think that it's true. Women do need to speak up, but I think we have been. I think we have been speaking up pretty loudly, many of us, for decades now. And again, too often we're met with derision, violence, homophobia, and oh, so much more. And I want to point out this article. There was a thing that happened. This was from earlier this week. Maybe it was last week. Time flies. It's from Texas. Rachel Bradshaw Bean claimed that she had been raped in the band room of her high school in Texas. And when she made this claim, school officials sprang quickly into action and kicked her out of school, accusing her of public lewdness. She was, in fact, a junior in high school at that time. She has since graduated. She's 20 years old now. She said the incident happened in December of 2010 and that she was then sent to a special school for students with discipline problems. Oh, yeah, along with the boy who had sexually assaulted her in the band room. So she had to see him every day for her senior year, as they were both punished for his rape of her. What is that? What is this about, right?
It is wrong. I don't know.
It is very, very wrong. And again, this is what we're finding in many of the headline rape cases from the last 2 years. That if a woman speaks up in college or in high school against a man who is popular, who's an athlete, she is told to basically have a big steaming cup of shut up. I'm editing this morning for the air. Because, in fact, she's not as important as he is. Her accusations could ruin his athletic career, for God's sakes. And again, what message are we giving our children? What message are we giving all female high school students? What message are we giving our male high school students? That's, one of those questions I have for you.
I was... from my trolling around and researching
I've got a million of them.
I know you do. There's 10 examples of gender inequality around the world. So I was looking, and they're talking about professional obstacles. It is good to, we in the West can leave our homes. Some women can't. Limited mobility. Okay, we got mobility in the West. Violence. Oh, still quite a bit of violence. It was just, even the things like, we can get in our cars and go places. That doesn't do it. Some of the things that, I want Saudi women to be able to drive. It's not that I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, in the end, is not it. What does it all boil down to? We don't have infanticide anymore. We're not generally...
Rock on completely.
Uh-huh. Still, things are...
Little topsy-turvy.
Restricted land ownership. Don't have that yet. We do have feminization of poverty. Yeah, we got that. Access to health care. Not really. And it depends on how much money you have still. Freedom to marry and divorce. Yes, we have that. There's still a bottom line. Political participation. We kind of have that, but what I see in a lot of politics is by the time women get to the upper echelon, they put the red suit on, but that's about, I don't see any, that much difference in their politics, and most people have been bought by corporations by the time they get to that point anyway. That's the only way to get, say, to be Speaker of the House, Vice President, President of the United States, or the Secretary of State.
It's by completely.
Yeah. Yeah, so
selling out half of your
humanity. Yeah, so there's something at the bottom of all this. There's some more bottom, because we're groping along with external things. Those are all external, though important. You know, having enough money to eat and live and be comfortable is very important. But I'm just saying, yeah, that it still all seems to come down to some economic things. And some of these external things still don't cut it yet.
Well, and
I'm
again,
asking questions.
Looking at how we value people. We value people through economics, right? I mean, that's in our crassly capitalistic society.
It is almost a crime to be poor anymore.
Well, it's totally a crime to be poor.
And it's also way expensive to be poor.
It's totally a crime to be poor. And I just want to say, you know, I don't buy into this. I don't think it's a good thing, but I do think that one of the ways that we show how important a person is through economic opportunity, right? And we see that, in fact, when you run the matrix and you look at intersectionalities of oppression and you look at racism and you look at sexism and you look at homophobia, that you tend to find those that are cisgendered, straight-acting, white, and generally male, come out on top. Not saying all cisgendered white guys are oppressors. I'm not saying that.
They have a position.
I'm just saying that this society favors, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to skip from that statement over. You know what I'm going to do first?
Mm-mm.
I'm going to talk about this article, but I'm going to do it after I mention that you are, in fact, listening to KBOO, your very own community radio station. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are, in fact, Positively Revolting. We are talking about smashing the patriarchy. We need you all to do it, too, because smashing the patriarchy, it's not just a thing for one or two or even three people. It really takes the whole freaking world working on it at the same time. And I am proud to be a part of the movement to smash the goddamn patriarchy. It is time. I made Lynn's eyes open wide. I said goddamn on the radio. And I will say it again. I mean, really, this is it's one of those things, right? I cannot stress enough how important it is to end sexism in our lives. I know it's kind of, you may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. You can also like our page on Facebook. You can find us facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. You can also email us positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. And of course, you can call in the studio here at 503-231-8187 and join us on the air. About the worth of women, about the deck being stacked, about how there is such disparate treatment. What am I going on about, you might ask? Well, again, looking at articles from, you know, the last couple weeks, last month, just to let people know that Marissa Alexander was released from prison. Yes, Marissa Alexander was released from prison. Now, maybe you don't know who Marissa Alexander is, but I do. Marissa Alexander was convicted of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. And she was sentenced to 20 years. 20 years in prison in Florida. What had she done to get 20 years in prison in Florida? Florida, the state that finds Zimmerman innocent in his murder of Trayvon Martin.
You stand your ground, state.
You stand your ground in Florida. You're fine. You feel threatened, you shoot that person. I'm having a hard time censoring my mouth this morning. You just go ahead. Stand your ground in Florida. Unless you happen to be a woman who is, in fact, in a relationship with somebody who is abusing her. In which case, you might not get to stand your ground quite so much. No one was injured by Marissa Alexander. I just want to point out that, in fact, she got a 20-year prison sentence under the state's mandatory minimum sentencing guidelines because she had fired a gun during an assault. I don't know where that particular law is in terms of Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. I don't know. But I'm going to say that Ms. Alexander shot a warning shot over the head of her husband. Right? And that she was in
fact sentenced. Does she get a note for being courteous and firing a shot above his head? No.
She gets 20 years.
Yeah.
Well, she was released in November. She is, I believe that she is awaiting a retrial. Yes, she is awaiting a retrial. So her, you know, like ordeal is not over, not in the least. It gets to be retried, and in the meantime, she gets to be outside of jail. The article does note that she is 5'2" tall. And that her husband is about 245 pounds, who was attacking her when she fired into a kitchen wall during an August 2010 incident. He had previously been convicted for domestic violence. Alexander had an active restraining order against her husband, and she had a permit to carry a concealed weapon. And yet, she was sentenced to 20 years.
Florida. What would we have talk shows do without Florida? I just don't know.
Just,
when it sinks,
know.
We'll find out. I believe that we've got a full slate of callers, and
let's
it is
talk
a talk
them,
show, so let's start with Matt.
Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. So, great show, by the way. And if you hear any crazy noises in the background, that's my 19-month-old son that I'm chasing around while I'm calling you in here.
Nice.
But, so I find myself with certain family members and friends that I have who kind of take more of like a libertarian, like American libertarian view of the world, that a lot of times the what it always boils down to, and you know, I suppose more of a humanist, more of a an empathetic soul, and so I'm always kind of pushing the point that it always boils down to a debate about human nature, and I always try to advocate the point that, you know, well, we must have been, you know, in those early stages of who we are, basically. What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. We've only got an hour. Come on.
Through evolutionary biology, that the selective process, that essentially empathy is something that's in all of us as a species, and that domination culture is something that we learn. Whereas the sort of libertarian mindset typically seems to be basically might is right.
And pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. Even if you don't have them.
Sure. And so when it comes to the any debate about you know, the existence of sexism or patriarchal you know, control of everything, it's sort of like, well, men can win you know, 99 times out of 100 in an arm wrestling match, therefore it's natural.
I know. That's that's a bumper sticker, right?
So anyway,
there.
I'm not articulating my question very well, but I would like to know any of basically what you guys would have to share about.
How would you talk? How would we talk to those relatives?
Versus nurture, and I'm sorry.
How would we talk to those relatives? Is that what you want to know?
Sure. Well, or if you have, I mean, through any of your readings or listenings, can weigh in on any of the
nature nurture tip.
Sure, I mean at least because mostly, I mean, I just kind of shoot from the hip with like my scatterings of, you know, things I've read here or heard there, but obviously this is something that positively revolting like has certainly put in some serious hours thinking about. So I'm just curious.
Well, thank you, Matt.
Sure. Well, so I'll jump off and let more articulate voices.
Well, have a good morning.
Take care of yourself.
And as Matt probably knows, chasing around a 19, I mean, there is that when you see 2-year-olds, you think nurturing really comes in. Are humans animals. Yes, we are. And we do have the unique, though I don't think we're unique in the animal kingdom about empathy. And if you've seen elephants, and I won't even talk about, you know, how many other animals, but it's just a strange question to me. And I think that people, it still comes down to fear and insecurity of being vulnerable. Don't you think?
Yes. Well, if I get the question, in fact, you can look cross-culturally, you can look throughout time, and you can find different things are ascribed to maleness, and different things are ascribed to femaleness. Different things are considered masculine or feminine and appropriate to whichever gender they're assigned to very differently. When you start really going into cross-cultural studies, check out, you know, cross-cultural incidences of rape. Check out cross-cultural incidences of male dominance. Check out a time span for this as well. It's interesting. I've done it before, and it would take far more than the 20 minutes we have left to really get into it.
When did rape start to become a weapon?
Where?
Okay. Where,
I mean, you know, there's so, again, it's when you look cross-culturally and throughout time, things get kind of, and I couldn't answer that. I honestly couldn't. But you can see patterns for male domination. You can see patterns emerging with the sky god from the Middle East, call it 10,000 years ago, but different parts of the world at different times. But this incursion of the patriarchy that we all know and love in Western culture, this that looks like our lives now, really seems to have stemmed from, say, the subversion of the goddess and a pantheistic spiritual understanding, with sort of more tribal formation into a period of population density, with the subversion of the pantheon of gods into a singularly dominant sky god. And it seems to be about 10,000 years ago, sort of more or less from there. But since you can kind of trace it back like that, I'm going to go ahead and say not a natural phenomenon, right? This was culture. Culture shifted into something that became hierarchical. And one of the early ways that hierarchy was defined was those that had male anatomy and those that didn't, right? Those that rose to the top and those that were property. And then you can go into in-group and out-group thinking. And, you know, your group are the people, and the out-group, not so much. And again, look at that. Go read The Chalice and the Blade. Rian Eisler's first work. I'm always trying to get people to read The Chalice and the Blade. Check that one out.
Yes.
Okay. So I've pontificated too much.
We've got callers, I tell you.
Let's talk to LJ. Good morning, LJ. You are on the air. Hey, LJ. There you are.
Good. Because, you know, with the patriarchy thing, I guess some Santa would be a patriarch, right?
don't get me going on Santa.
Santa is an ad campaign.
Okay. And anyway, just a couple of things. On
Santa's a sparkle in everyone's
eye. I know.
It's not an ad campaign. Stop it.
All right.
Just a couple of things on my mind. Patriarchy as it pertains to the military. As we all know, women who serve their time in the military and put their lives on the line for the empire are subjects of abuse and sexual abuse, mental abuse on a daily basis. They have to put up with this. I've read stories where some women in the military fear their fellow soldiers more than they fear the enemy, whoever that is. And I'm just wondering what your take is now that President Obama has signed into law the sexual assault bill as it pertains to the military, along with the 2-year budget that was supposed to be able to live with for the next couple of years, and what you're feeling about that is, and if you feel that that sexism in the military will end now that this bill has
because there's a bill been signed that says you can't do it anymore.
That's right. So is that going to end it?
No.
What do you think?
I don't think that ends it. I think it's an interesting step. I mean, I do think that you absolutely do need to acknowledge that the problem exists rather than being in denial about it. I think that that's hugely important. It's the first step in changing something. And I do think that you have to decry it. You have to say, oh, no, this can't happen anymore. We can't be raping our own soldiers. That's not okay. I mean, that's like the good step for the president to take. Sure. Does that change the culture? No, that doesn't change the culture. While as long as we have a military that is built upon breaking down the psyche of its new recruits and doing so by using the most profane insults that are generally sexist in nature on the recruits, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're telling the guys to toughen up and you're calling them all manner of bits of female anatomy and not in a positive manner, you know, then that culture doesn't change because some president in some office somewhere signed something that does not change the reality for the soldiers in the trenches.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
There were a lot of objections to this bill. Senator McCain said it's not good for morale. Okay,
it's not really funny, but oh my God.
It's not good for morale to go against the chain of command.
Yeah, okay.
We haven't got time to go into that the whole way, but yes, that's...
You've just had me choke on my coffee right there, LJ.
Well, that speaks for itself, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, I think McCain and I are actually almost in agreement there in some sort of weird way. Yeah, I mean, I think the behavior is going to be... It continues to be encouraged in any of a number of fashions.
Right, right.
And in much the same way, these horrific... stories of women being told to shut up and to put up with their treatment because otherwise they're going to embarrass the athletes at the university,
right?
Or
right.
You know, the important marching band member or whatever was the case in this incident in Texas with Rachel Bradshaw Bean, and I really want to remember her name because she's doing good public work now to try to bring to light the sort of attitude that young women face in high schools now that she's 20 years old and is coming forward with her story. Rachel Bradshaw Bean, go girl. I think that, you know, she's one of my new heroes.
Just one more quick real...
Yeah.
Just one more really quick thing and give other people a chance. I was listening to Al Jazeera. And there was a little story in there about women in Saudi Arabia are not allowed to drive. It's against the law.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. for a woman to be behind the wheel of an automobile.
That's so true.
Yep.
And anyway, it's nom-tom.
And they've been working on that big time. The women in Saudi Arabia have. The women in Saudi Arabia have been working on this there a couple months ago, time goes by so fast. They had a whole big sort of drive-in.
Yeah, I heard it was
within the last month.
Was it? Okay.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway,
right.
thank you for the show.
LJ.
Thank you for the dialogue, and I want to wish you guys a really happy new year.
You as well, LJ.
And go KBOO.
Thank you.
Take care.
So, chanting down the patriarchy, ending the patriarchy in the new year, ending the patriarchy in our lives.
Yes.
I hope springs eternal.
I know. Well, no, it's a tough slog.
It's
something that's going to take a while, but it just doesn't seem like it can last.
It's been going on for, 10,000 years, as I think I've just pointed out, more or less. But I see no reason not to call it enough. Let's just stop.
Okay.
All right. Ending the patriarchy in 2014 with Positively Revolting. Let's go ahead and talk to Paul. Good morning, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi, Ani. This is Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
So actually, when I called in, it seemed like nobody was calling, which is one reason I called in. But I wanted to carry over with what Matt was saying about the sort of the nature versus nurture. Because a lot of, seems like earlier you guys were talking about.
Oop, I think we lost Paul. I see the little twinkly light is out.
Oh, perhaps Paul can call back very quickly.
That would be great. Nurture nature. It's a big question.
We wish we knew what he was going to say.
I know. It's a big question. And I really like that we're discussing it, that it's being discussed, because it's such a stumbling block into working with this stuff. It looks like we might have Paul back. We've got somebody on the line. Anyway.
And now we ponder.
When we ponder.
But allow me to say, you are listening to Positively Revolting.
Oh, good thing to say.
KBOO, your community radio station. I'm here with Lynn every Friday morning, except next Friday, when Lynn will be absconding to some fabulous vacation world. And I will be here alone. Alone in the studio. And but just to say, you can, in fact, find us on Facebook, facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. Like our fan page. Stay in touch with us all week long. Find fascinating things that we post, just like I posted last week with this great video from the Misrepresentation Project. And you can find that, in fact, at Positively Revolting's Facebook page. That's facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. It was posted by Upworthy. It's called "There's Something Absolutely Wrong with What We Do to Boys." And it is by, I keep wondering if I'm saying it right. It's by the Representation Project. They are looking at making the documentary Misrepresentation. That's why I kept getting those names confused.
Okay.
Look, both of them.
Paul seems to be back.
Good. Paul.
Oh, hey. Well, you know, since I took it this far, I might as well at least see what it is.
Go, Paul.
Okay, what I was going to say was that it seems like a lot of what you were talking about in the earlier part of the show was criticizing normative roles and dynamics, et cetera, under patriarchy. And what Matt was starting to get at, and then you started to get at, seems to indicate that there was a time, perhaps this mythical golden age, in which there was actually normative social roles that were, are, could be non-patriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's so that we had a way of, that there is a possible way of living that has social roles and interactions and behaviors that are something different than what we call patriarchy or whatever, dominating or whatever.
Sure.
So it seems like it would behoove us to learn more about what those actual, like, mechanisms or roles or whatever it is could be so that we can actually live differently than whatever it is we're talking about as patriarchy.
I absolutely concur, and I don't think you have to go back 10,000 years and look at where we were, what we were doing in the Fertile Crescent. I think that actually you can look cross-culturally far more recently and find cultures that are not hell-bent on domination. And then, you know, at the more egalitarian a society, you know, it's not like there are no prescribed roles, right, for what is man, what is woman, what is, you know, grandmother, what is grandfather, what is, everyone has roles to play. What I'm looking at is what happens if those roles actually allow us to express our full humanity. The culture's a tricky thing. Without culture, you know, what holds us together? You know, there are some cultural traits that are very important, right? And they define our culture. They're wonderful. They're vibrant. They're what makes us who we are. But look at it critically and try to assess what role culture is playing in our own oppression. And those are the parts of culture we need to transform. And maybe we need to look at other cultures so that we can actually see, oh, wait, How could this be human nature if this culture handles it absolutely differently? And maybe we need to gravitate towards what that culture is doing. How does that make sense to them? How can it make sense in our world? And
modeling,
look at some back and forth.
Important. And when you have nothing to model yourself with.
But how do we actually bring those into, if it's like a catch 22, if we're so immersed in these social roles and these mechanisms and these conditionings that we can't seemingly break free of them, then how do we actually import something different and actuate it right here and now in our actual lives?
It's tricky.
Well, I think that can't break free of it is the key. Mm-hmm. That phrase needs to be changed. I mean, there's no other way than people breaking free of it. And I think, I mean, you know, it's happening. It's not universal at this point, but people are, the fact that that we're even thinking about it.
It happens when parents refuse to tell their kids to be ladylike or to man up. I mean, that's really essential. That is an essential first step. It happens when we ourselves as individuals look at our lives and say, hey, that doesn't apply to me. That I'm actually a person, and your idea of what is appropriate for me to be lady is too limiting, and that's not who I am.
And with that, that is a darn fine way to end the conversation, I think, because we're running short as far as show goes.
It's true. We only have a minute or two left. It's mm-hmm. true.
Paul, okay, thank you.
Thanks very much, Paul. I mean, so it goes on from there. And it's true. We are now out of show, but I wanted to get into that discussion. And a show in the future, we'll have a more fleshed out discussion of how we get over this socialization and where we look for modeling. That would be a good show.
Uh-huh. Let's do that show. Sounds like a very good show to do sometime next year. And we want to thank everyone for listening to us throughout this whole year. I hope you all have, as the Romans say, it's New Year's. Good Roman calendar.
Gregor, where would we be without you?
and continue, please, 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 to stay positively revolting. We'll see you in the new year.
You'll see me first.
Yeah. You see Annie first.
There comes a time.
Tune in every Friday at 3 p.m. for Roots of Rock and Roll. Dale Farr and Steve Bricker play rare and vintage records from rhythm and blues, jump blues, rockabilly, and doo-wop. From the birth of rock and roll, the 50s and early 60s. Roots of Rock and Roll, only on KBOO Portland.
This has been a lifelong dream for me to be on the radio. I've been wanting to be on the radio since I was a kid. I've always been into radio. And that's why I've started volunteering here at KBOO, because I wanted to know everything there was to know about radio.
It's been so much a part of my life for over 30 years plus now, and I can't imagine Portland without it or my life without it. So here we are on KBOO.
it's a cornerstone of Portland. You know, lots of people I know cut their teeth here who are DJs, and it's just, it's a special place.
It's a creative place. It's very creative. A lot of artists here. It's political, and I like the politics. There's great people here.
Come on down to the next volunteer orientation on Wednesday, January 8th from 7 to 9 p.m. here at the KVU Studios at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
And this is KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 9.01 a.m. Coming up, One Land, Many Voices, with co-hosts Ned Roche and Zaha Hassan interview Ziad Abbas from the Middle East Children's Alliance and Mohammed Nabil, a Palestinian student from Gaza, about the crisis in Gaza as a result of the fuel shortage. They also speak with local activist Tom Bell about the international call for the boycott of SodaStream. At 10, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. Air Cascada is off today. And at 11 on the Radio Zine, we hear part one of a panel discussion on Fukushima, Hanford, and the Columbia Generating Station with Miriam Gurman of Radcast.org and activists Lloyd Marbit, John Bertucci, Dan Serres, Chuck Johnson, and Malcolm Chaddock. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and thank you to you all the KBOO members for your generous support for community radio. If you are not a current member, you can become one when you go to kboo.fm. Click where it says donate today. Stay tuned.
This week on the Electronic Intifada podcast, an in-depth interview with Dr. Tarek Loubani, who along with filmmaker and activist John Grayson was imprisoned in Egypt for 50 days. We'll speak to Dr. Loubani about treating the wounded while inside prison and the dire medical situation inside Gaza, where he and Grayson were on their way to when they were arrested and imprisoned.
Israelis intend for the isolation to be debilitating. They intend for the isolation to be destructive. But what the Palestinians in Gaza have done is they've turned that isolation into their own kind of empowerment. You're talking now about possibly the best indigenous medical system to be created within such a terrible siege.
Plus, a special report on a plan by Christian Zionists to take over a Palestinian college in the Galilee region of historic Palestine. Our contributor Patrick O. Strickland interviews boycott activist Omar Barghouti.
Such projects are not welcome.